Christian Science, Pure Metaphysics. By Dr. Francis J. Fluno, CSD. Member of the Board of Lectureship of the Mother Church. The First Church of Christ Scientist, in Boston, Massachusetts. Published in pamphlet form by the Christian Science Publishing Society, 1917. The term metaphysics, derived from two Greek words, meta, meaning over, above, or beyond, and physicus, meaning physical, signifies over, beyond, or above the physical. In true metaphysics, or absolute Christian Science, all is mind, there is nothing physical or material, there is no matter. The so-called science of physics has no part with true science or metaphysics. Beginning with matter, all is matter, there is no mind. Beginning with mind, all is mind, there is no matter. There is nothing real that mind does not evolve, govern, and control. Mind is spirit, and everything that spirit creates is like itself, spiritual and not material. To spirit there is no matter, all is spirit. The finite, limited, or material sense would have all things material, would have life, substance, and intelligence in objects, but the spiritual or unlimited sense, the scientific understanding, reveals the spiritual to be the real and the material the unreal. The so-called material universe is not the true idea. Wipe out or eliminate all that can be called a material universe or a material man, and the true man, the true expression of God, still remains, and will forever remain, no more subject to change or annihilation than is God, the infinite principle, in whom man lives, upon whom he depends, and whom he represents. To find man, the true man, is not to study the physical man so called, but to study the reflection of God. By so doing we grow into the consciousness or realization of our relation to God and attain the divine atonement or at-one-ment with the Father, and this means having no other life, no other intelligence, but God, the divine principle. True qualities are permanent. Nothing that God has made can ever be lost. The spire of grass that carpets the green meadow, the cactus eking out a life on the parched and sandy desert, the lichen on the highest rock that decks the lofty mountain, or seaweed in the deepest depths of yonder rolling ocean, the flower that blossoms in the vale, or waves upon the summit of some monarch of the wood, the tree that grows in sheltered nook or deeper, denser forest, the insect that flits, the worm that crawls, or the serpent with his cunning, the bird that warbles in the grove, or soars in ether blue, the fish that swims in brook or rill, or broader, deeper water, the beast that roams the prairies free or crouches in the jungle, the constellation or a star in all that vast infinity, and man, the consummation and combination of all God's handiwork, all, in their true spiritual being, have their place in the infinite mind. Anything less than an infinite expression would make God less than infinite in entity. God, the infinite intelligence, will never lose sight of aught that he has made, and all he has made is good. By studying the true principle we will be able to find the true solution of each and every problem, and each object of creation, in its true character, will be found harmonious, pure, and perfect. Isaiah's prophecy of Christ's kingdom among other things says, "The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and a little child shall lead them." Already we begin to find that against innocence and fearlessness the fangs of the serpent are never raised, for Jesus said of those who believe, "They shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them." Spirit, the only basis. Beginning with matter, we have no foundation. Matter cannot see, hear, speak, or have sensation. Matter cannot originate mind or dwell in mind, for it is the opposite of mind. Non-intelligence cannot become intelligent. Christian Science comes separating the gold from the dross, the wheat from the chaff. It comes separating mind from matter, the spirit from the flesh, immortality from mortality, the true from the false, the right from the wrong, that which is from that which is not. Spirit is God, the one only good, who is life, truth, love, intelligence, soul, substance. Spirit is also infinite, eternal, omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. You cannot get over, around, or under spirit, for, in him we live, and move, and have our being. It is God who formed the great law, who framed, controls, and governs the spiritual universe. Existing in boundless space, yet also here with us, expressed in your consciousness, and also here in mine, the still small voice of spirit forever comes to us in thought. It is the pure river of water of life, clear as the fountain is, unsullied in the stream, taking no taint from touch of human lips, at best impure. Spirit never mingles with matter. As we cease to depend upon matter and learn to depend upon spirit, we become more and more harmonious. What a never-failing fount of strength is this compared with a belief of strength in a muscle? What an inexhaustible storehouse of wisdom and intelligence, compared with a dependence upon a material brain, which, forsooth, may be too large, too small, or of too poor material. What an all-supporting and sustaining principle upon which to lean for life and health, compared with a dependence upon liver, lungs, stomach, blood, air, exercise, material drugs, or material food. Life is self-existent. Life is self-existent principle, self-existent because it could not be made or evolved, for it would ever require life to make life. That which could make life must itself have life, and of necessity must itself ultimately be life. Hence we must conclude that life is self-existent, and that which has its existence within itself can never be slain. This is the life that is God, and there is no other. The so-called physical life is but a belief of life in the body, where there is no life. On this same basis we have to conclude that truth and love are self-existent, but when we speak of truth we mean immutable truth, and when we speak of love, we do not refer to the personal selfish affections that depend upon feelings, but the love that is God. Life, truth, and love constitute the primal triune deity, the three-in-one principle, the spirit that is God. Christian science is not speculative or conjectural, neither is its principle hypothetical. Truth, God, must of necessity be, and be primal. A negation could not be primal, for if a negation were primal there would be no way by which to prove that it were a negation. Two things opposed to each other cannot both be true. Since the negative, or error, could not be, and be primal, hence its opposite, the positive, or truth, must be, and be primal, and from the primal all things must proceed. And since truth cannot express itself in error, therefore there can be no error. Truth cannot result in error, the positive cannot result in the negative. Love cannot result in hate, life cannot result in death. If life could result in death, then death would be the victor and life the vanquished, then all would be death, and there would be no life. If truth could result in error, then error would be the victor and truth the vanquished, then all would be error, and there would be no truth. But these are things impossible. By virtue of the fact that the positive is, the negative cannot be. The positive is the real, the negative the unreal. Truth is the real, error the unreal. Love is the real, hate the unreal. Life is the real, death the unreal. Harmony is the real, discord the unreal. Spirit is the real, and flesh the unreal. For the flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary the one to the other. One is, and the other is not, but to finite sense it seems to be. Did God, then, make the mortal to war against the spiritual? All he made was good, and must therefore be harmonious. God never made mortality, he could not, for there is no mortality in him, and all we really have and are comes from him. Mortality is a myth, it is the delusion of the senses, the negative of immortality. The carnal mind is enmity against God. The carnal mind is the mortal mind, the negative mind, or beliefs that rest upon appearances. We appear to have sensation in a nerve and strength in a muscle, to have life in the body and intelligence in the brain, but science proves that appearance to be false. Eternity is now. Finite sense made time. God made eternity. According to Christian science, we are in eternity now, there is no time. When we begin to realize the idea of eternity, we begin to lose the sense of time. The angel of truth, that John saw, is standing today with one foot upon the sea and the other upon the land, proclaiming with a loud voice that time shall be no more. Heaven, harmony, is inevitable, it is the primal and ultimate fact of being. It is the ever-present reality of being, and its opposite, hell, is not a reality, either past, present, or future. Let your heaven be renewed each day, each hour, and the so-called future will take care of itself. Heaven, as Mrs. Eddy has said, is the reign of harmony, science and health, page 590, and there is no fear in harmony. Harmony is heaven, fear is torment, and the fear that is torment will never lead you into the harmony that is heaven. The harmony that is heaven will never be fully realized while the fear of hell remains. Perfect love gives perfect confidence, hence love brings harmony. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, i.e., perfect love will not admit of fear. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Truth is infinite, the infinity of truth is expressed in all that really is, hence the desire of each and all to know, to comprehend and realize the truth expressed in everything. There is no rest in idleness, there is no happiness outside of progression. We will never find the downhill until we learn to love the uphill, and then it will be downhill all the way. To reach each day, each hour, new, a mightier, and a sublimer consciousness of truth, that brings light and liberty in harmony to our benighted vision, is heaven all the time. In truth we have absolute liberty, but in error we find nothing but obstruction and disappointment. Gaining freedom. As a man gains more freedom in science, he will be more and more liberated from the bondage of sense. As he grows more and more out of the limited, he will gain more and more the unlimited. As a man loses his fear, he will gain his freedom. If you are fearing anything, you are in torment in the proportion that that fear has possession of you. If you are fearing sickness, you are in bondage to that fear. If you are fearing error, then you are a slave to error. If you are fearing the devil, just turn around and face him, instead of running from him, and see him vanish like the mist, leaving in its stead the radiant beams of truth. Every fear is a demon, and for every demon that you cast out, an angel will take its place. And if you are fearing hell, take the torchlight of truth and love and explore that reputed region from top to bottom, from center to circumference. By so doing you will turn that dreadful hell to heaven and make it a paradise complete. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there, and where God is, there is heaven. If you are honestly searching for truth, you can never go astray, for you will either find the truth of the true or the untruth of the false. The truth you'll accept because it is true, the false you'll reject because it is false. What we want is freedom to find the truth, to let our thoughts have wings, to traverse the realms that be, and walk with the great I Am. Then on pinions of love and light we rise, and reach the height supernal, and drink of the benizzans sweet that flow in the unsullied river of life, and take of the leaves of that beautiful tree that on this and on that side is growing. There a balm will be found our diseases to heal, and the fruit will be life eternal. Error may seem to suppress truth, but it cannot. Truth is impregnable. Nothing can scale its lofty walls or enter its sacred precincts, except in the way that truth itself shall lead, and love must be the prompter. All who enter here must take their shoes from off their feet, must divest themselves of material or mortal sense, for this is holy ground. Science admits of no personal opinion, it is founded upon the rock of self-evident demonstrable truth, and can never be shaken. There are no beliefs in science. Belief implies doubt, and all beliefs vanish when understanding appears. With all thy getting get understanding. Mrs. Eddy's discovery. Columbus believed there was a land beyond the sea, he searched, he found, he no longer merely believed, he knew. Newton believed there was a law that governed the phenomenon of the falling apple. Galileo believed there was an established principle controlling the stellar universe. Mrs. Eddy believed there was a scientific law underlying and controlling the health of man. She searched, she found, she demonstrated, she no longer simply believed, she knew. Our leader's knowledge reached beyond the testimony of the senses. To her thought, physical seeing was not scientific knowing. No high grade of finite belief entered into her scientific understanding of the science of all things. She left no mere personal opinion, to be changed to higher thoughts by those who in the ages to come should write of things immortal. Her discovery of the science of life lifted her above the poet's dream of time and space and things that are superior but not supreme. Her basic principle for the Christly science was unchanging truth, undying life, and unselfish love, the ultimatum and substantiation of all things, yea, the divine omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence. Yet while Mrs. Eddy's standard for Christian science was perfection itself, she rejoiced to know that the all-embracing law of love lifts poor mortals from their low estate to the higher thought of God. It was my great privilege to have her teaching both in primary and normal class instruction, and afterward in her own home as well. I learned to love her because she had the love that lifted me out of the physical and material into the metaphysical and spiritual. Hers was like the love which enabled the great exemplar to reach from the pinnacle of perfection to lift the Magdalene thought to behold the risen Lord. Hers was a noble nature, brave yet gentle, generous and kind. When you saw her, she had won you, when you knew her, you had loved her. Science and the Bible. The science of being does not contradict the Bible, it substantiates the Bible. But it may contradict some person's beliefs about the Bible. Truth will destroy all error, will vanquish every foe. Truth is first, and can result in nothing but harmony. Sin, sickness, sorrow, pain, and death are discords, of which to know the truth is to be freed from their grasp. There is no truth in sin, that is, there is no truth, hence no reality, in the sinful thought that prompts a sinful action, and that which is unreal is false and is therefore nothing. Sin, however, is a mistaken belief that must be destroyed through suffering or science. The grand lesson that all must sooner or later learn is that all must come to truth. The hard road is by the way of suffering and experience, the easier way is through searching and acceptance. God is omnipotent, for God is truth, and truth must overcome all evil. No one may escape the penalty due for sin, each must pay the uttermost farthing, be he so-called saint or sinner. Every one must suffer until his belief in evil is destroyed, and, through choice, he desires to be led by unchanging truth and unselfish love. God is not mocked, For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Evil brings its own reward. If you sow to the flesh, you shall of the flesh reap corruption. Disease is discord, the seeming absence of ease, that comes of sowing to the flesh. It is a ghost, a phantom thought that comes flitting along, and in the fertile soil of fear begotten of ignorance the discordant seed takes root. Instead of turning upon it and correcting it in embryo, we fear it until it grows to be a monster. We think it real and let it grow, when all we need to do is to turn and face the ghost with the flaming sword of truth, and soon it will shrink to nothingness and be lost in its native nowhere. Pathology and medicine. Pathology is another theory like the old one of the earth and its foundations. The earth was supposed to stand upon a pedestal, and that upon something else, and that upon something else, and they never found the ultimate something else. Now pathology always flies from this cause to that cause, and from that cause to the other cause, but it never finds the primal or ultimate cause of any disease. Finite sense begins with the appearance, the evidence of the senses, and tries to reach a fundamental principle. Evolution has reached to protoplasm. Pathology has gone as far as bacteria, but it is still an open question which was first, the disease or the germ, whether the germ caused the disease or the disease produced the germ. This question can be answered only as it is answered in Christian Science, which proves conclusively that neither the disease nor the germ is true, both are false. And since the premise is false, the conclusion must also be false. From nothing it came, and to nothing it must return. And medical science must follow in the wake of pathology, for since disease is nothing, there can be no medicine for it, except the medicine of truth which proves the nothingness of disease. Matter has no intelligence. Drugs cannot direct themselves, they cannot say, I will go to the lungs, or I will work upon the blood, or upon the nerves, or upon the glandular tissue. Drugs have no intelligence to direct themselves, it is simply your faith, and the faith of those around you, mixed with the faith of all mankind, that seems to make them work. The medical fraternity, finding drugs a failure in the healing art, has turned to amputation and operation. It has amputated almost everything but amputation, and operated on almost everything but operation. Christian Science has come to the world, and eventually it will perform every needful wonder. For the science of life, from its very nature, must overcome all evil, both cause and effect, both disease and its so-called physical cure. True life and health. Physical health is a belief of health in the body, and is a failure, therefore it is a poor kind of health. Likewise, physical strength is a belief of strength in a muscle, and is overcome by weakness, hence physical strength is weakness. In like manner, mortal or finite life is a belief of life in matter, and is overcome by death, therefore mortal life is death. From this we might say in Bible phraseology, if the life that is in you be death, how great is that death? If the strength that is in you be weakness, how great is that weakness? And if the health that is in you be a failure, how great is that failure? True health is not in physical man or material things, it is a property or quality of the eternal life principle, and is as unchangeable and infallible as the eternal God himself. And this property or quality, true health, must be and is expressed by every truly living thing. So also true strength is not so-called physical strength, which overexerts itself and gives way to weakness and therefore is weakness, but a property or quality of eternal truth, hence it knows no weakness. Man's true strength lies in the recognition and scientific understanding that God, divine principle, undying life, unchanging truth, and unselfish love, is and must be expressed, and the true man and the true universe must be like him, unchangeable and eternal. True life, therefore, is not life in the body, but the forever living and eternal life principle that is God, expressed by pure spiritual beings, who know no death. Like the great life principle, they always were and always will be reflecting perfect and unfailing health and inexhaustible strength. Our Master says, "Take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat, or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow, they toil not, neither do they spin, and yet I say unto you, that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Turn forever away from sense to soul, from flesh to spirit, from body to mind, and find in soul, in spirit, in mind, the only true source of life, of strength, of health, and of happiness. It is a self-evident fact, that if mind has aught to do in controlling the body, it has all, for a house divided against itself shall not stand. One must be the master. True mind healing. Christian Science is true mind healing, but what is commonly called mind healing may be quite different. So-called mind healing begins with an evil man, according to the testimony of the senses, and tries to make him good. It begins with a sick man and tries to make him well. Christian Science, reversing this procedure, begins with perfection as a basis of every thought and action. It begins with perfect principle, or God, and perfect man, and from this scientific basis demonstrates perfection at every step. History repeats itself. Of old, the messenger of truth was accused of casting out devils by the prince of devils. Today, Christian Science is accused of casting out error with error, of healing sickness and sin by mesmerism, hypnotism, mental suggestion, or autosuggestion. The world of mortal mind, or finite sense, is a seething sea of animal magnetism, autosuggestion, and mental suggestion. All mortals from the mortal standpoint are mental malpractitioners. Consciously or unconsciously, until corrected by the knowledge of the truth, they are living in the belief of a God-given mind in a material brain, which suppositional mind is a mixture of good and evil, of right and wrong, of love and hate. But Christian Science not only heals mankind of sickness and sin, it also heals of autosuggestion, mental suggestion, hypnotism, mesmerism, animal magnetism, spiritualism, and some other isms. For Christian Science is the science of truth and true being, and must of necessity rule out all that is unlike God, the absolute and only good. Christian Science covers the whole ground, and solves the problem of being physically, morally, financially, temporarily, and eternally. If Christian Science is not good for everything, then Christian Science is not good for anything. And if Christian Science is not good for everyone, then Christian Science is not good for anyone. Need of divine principle. All sin, all disease, all discord of whatever sort, is perpetuated by trying to solve the problem of being, without or independently of divine principle, or by trying to make the principle conform act to the problem, thus necessitating as many principles as problems. This process finally makes discord the basis of being and harmony a non-reality. Here we see the Tower of Babel, which is trying to reach health and harmony from the basis of disease and discord, trying to build a medical science upon an unscientific basis, and trying to reach immutable truth from the foundation of appearance and belief. God, the great primal principle, is, and must be the origin of all. Then if disease or discord is a reality, it must be of Him. All we really have, comes from Him. If He sends it, He must have it, and must be the origin of it. If He does not send it but permits it for our good, and He is omnipotent, then He virtually does it, and makes evil necessary that good may come. Such doctrine is too absurd for this enlightened age. According to physics, this material body which is called man is 75% water. If you weigh 160 pounds, 120 pounds of that is water, and according to physiology this entire body undergoes complete reconstruction once in 3 to 7 years. The water that largely constituted your physical body a few years ago has floated away in vapor and perchance settled in some lakelet. A goose drinks it and then it is goose. Has that water any more intelligence when it says it is man than when it says it is goose? When is it the greater goose, when it struts itself a man or when it waddles itself a goose? Because we look to the body for health and strength, we are doomed to disappointment, and this for the simple reason that these qualities are not in the body. Nothing in this material universe is reliable, even mortal or finite success is a failure, and this because it is finite. These are the Apostle Paul's words, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. He that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. In the Revelation of John we read, God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. Irrefutable logic. You will agree with me that where God is, sin, sickness, sorrow, pain, and death can never come. You will further agree with me that God is omnipresent, then you have also already agreed with me in this third statement, namely, that all discord and all mortality is a non-reality. You would dishonor God and do violence to mankind by admitting these things as realities in His presence. You must either reject His perfection and omnipresence, or admit the unreality of all discord and all mortality. You will furthermore agree with me that God is omnipotent, that He is omnipotence itself, that all power is vested in Him, and there is no other power, that He rules, and He alone. Moreover, you will agree that He does not will and is not willing that any should perish. Then you have also already agreed with me in this third statement, namely, that none can perish. For if God is omnipotent and does not will or is not willing that any should perish, then who, I ask, shall say Him nay? The alternative conclusion must be, as is sometimes taught, that in spite of infinite love and the omniscience and omnipotence of God, the devil still gets 10,000 into endless perdition while God gets one in heaven. We may at least pray God to forgive the blind who lead and give sight to the blind who follow, and lead them to the light of truth divine, that must finally overcome all evil, dispel all darkness, and vanquish every foe. Mortality alone must die, for it is the child of the devil, who was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. The sooner mortality dies the better, but we must not be overcome of evil, but must overcome evil with good, we must not be overcome of death, but must overcome death with life. Disappearance of mortality. The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death. We must separate the mortal from the immortal, separate the flesh from the spirit, and do it today, not after death. The devil says, do it after death. God says, now is the accepted time. And why does God say now? Because God is truth, and in truth there is no other time, there is one eternal now. And why does the devil say after death? Because there is no death, all is life. Everything that the devil makes or advises is just like himself, a lie from the beginning. All that really is can never die, and that which is not is dead already. Mortality is a myth, there is no mortality. It is the carnal mind, the seeming, that depends upon the senses, that seems to make man mortal. God, the infinite intelligence, names everything after its true, perfect, and harmonious character, while the atom or false sense names everything after its false, material, or seeming character. One is true, the other is false, one is, the other is not, but only seems to finite sense to be. Jesus proved this in his last and final demonstration. All through his earth life, even to the time when he showed himself to doubting Thomas, Jesus presented a material body. He ate and drank and labored and wearied and wept and joyed like any of us. But he went away leaving not a chrysalis behind, and we know that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Jesus said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father." He overcame death with life, he overcame the mortal with the immortal, he overcame the flesh with the spirit, he overcame the false with the true. He was not overcome of evil, but overcame evil with good. He made the divine atonement, or at-one-ment, with the Father. He yielded up self entirely, and would have no life in the body, but in mind, hence he became one with the Father. And he said, "I and my Father are one. The flesh profiteth nothing. Your true self is the spiritual expression of spirit, and spirit is God. Hence we express spirit, not matter." We have been singing the praises of and praying at and to a corporeal deity, as though he needed anything, or that we were going to get something by asking that he would not give if we did not ask. God is unchangeable, and is giving us more every day than we in our ignorance know how to ask for, or even how to accept. The simplest prayer is the heart's sincere desire to know the truth. To know him, whom to know aright is life eternal, science and health, preface, page 7. Desiring truth, you will search for truth, and seeking, you shall find, and an ever-increasing desire for more will prove your appreciation of what you already have. Thus you will fulfill the divine injunctions, pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks. Coming of Divine Theology. For the past 1900 years theology, in the character of John the Baptist, has been preached in the wilderness of mortal sense. But there cometh one mightier than it, even divine science, the science of Christ, truth, understood and demonstrated, the latchet of whose shoes, the old theology is, not worthy to stoop down and unloose. When Howe put the eye of the needle in the point, instead of the larger end, he revolutionized the great mercantile world. When Galileo said, "The earth moves and the sun stands still," he revolutionized all theories concerning the stellar universe. And when Mrs. Eddy said, "Mind can never be in man, but is reflected by man," Science and Health, page 336, she revolutionized theology, physiology, and medicine. Mary of old gave birth to the pure-minded Jesus, the Christ personified. The Mary of today has given birth to the incorporeal Christ idea, the true idea of God and man, as revealed in Christian Science. Do you recognize this coming? Do you know the trumpet tone? Is your ear attuned to hear the truth? We know the blast is blown. Do you see the consummation? That the mighty work is done. That death and hell are yielding up. And the dragon is cast down. Yes, the morning light is breaking, the first faint gleams of ruddy light now tint the eastern sky, shedding its effulgent rays over a benighted world. And through the clouds of mortal sense the spirit of truth, descending like shafts of light shot through a waste of darkness dense, reveals a spiritual world in God as the only author, architect, and builder. Yes, the fourth watch of the night is come, and you that have toiled all night rowing against the adverse winds may look up and see Christ, truth, walking o'er the waves of mortal sense. Go ye out to meet him, for he comes to still the tempest's roar and calm the raging seas. You who have lain long years at the pool of Bethesda, waiting for the troubling of the waters, may now cease to look down, may look up and see Christ, waiting to make you whole. But when you are made whole, then sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. And you who have seen the star in the east, the spiritual light of truth divine, if to you that light be strong, then go and tell to sinners round what a dear Savior you have found. But if that light be faint, then follow where it leads, till it comes and stands over where the young child is. And when you have found him, open your treasure, and present yourself and all that is within you, a living sacrifice for the truth that makes you free. In the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, Mrs. Eddy has truly said, page 568, "For victory over a single sin, we give thanks and magnify the Lord of hosts. What shall we say of the mighty conquest over all sin? A louder song, sweeter than has ever before reached high heaven, now rises clearer and nearer to the great heart of Christ, for the accuser is not there, and love sends forth her primal and everlasting strain."